Yes.
We've always heard this thing about all your family being people no decent person should associate with. Well, I shouldn't say this, I suppose, beloved, but I'm afraid my father is often a bit, well, bourgeois.
I bet not as often as my father is.
It's nothing to do with drink, Ron. Bourgeois means snobby.
Snobby.
Well, yes. Because some of father's relations are quite, you know, posh. You see, his mother before she married was a loader.
A load of what, eh?
Yes, at the end of the 50s, Take It From Here was still going strong, and the Glums in particular never stronger. But this was a program originating in the 40s, and with the 60s imminent, it was time for a change. The Goons felt the same. Some of their most famous shows came in the last couple of series from Spike Milligan's pen. But by 1960, he'd taken goonery right through the decade and couldn't be expected to rack his brains or jeopardize his morale any longer. The end, when it came, wasn't notable for sentimentality or gush.
Oh, Doctor!
You're lucky to be a layman.
What's that wee thing in your mouth?
Yes, that was it. The last of them. So, bye now.
And that, apart from the commemorative and nostalgic last Goon show of all, which was filmed for television in 1972, was that. It's often said that broadcast humour would never be the same again after the shake-up the Goons had given it. But it depends what kind of humour you mean. There were some kinds that had carried on regardless.
Presenting the Al Reed Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, we do have your stay with us for the next half hour. From here on, we're turning by sound just to show you the funny side. Here's introducing us to ourselves. Here is Al Reed.
Introducing us to ourselves were the important words in that, very reminiscent of Wilfred Pickles' old idea of bringing the people to the people. Northern comedy had kept its fondness for the notion that humour was a mirror held up to life, and that we'd laugh hardest at the kind of human foible and domestic disaster that we ourselves had participated in. The drawback with this was that many things about the rhythms and idioms of life in the North were different from what Southerners saw in their mirror. Hence, the tactic widely adopted by Northern comics of exaggerating the old whippets and flat hats stereotype just enough to make Southerners feel safe without offending the genuine Northerners. Within a couple of years, the Coronation Street team on TV were going to get that balance exactly right, learning from people like Al Reed.
Well, things get no better, do they? Things are just as bad. I mean, baked food. We all know the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. Feed the brute, that's the thing. But as you come down to breakfast in the morning and sit at the table, you'll hardly time to reach over with your knife, and what do you get? I hope you know that's all the butter we've got. That's the wife from the kitchen. How do you mean, love? Where you grow that butter pot, you'd think we kept a dairy. And don't use the same knife you've just had in your egg. Too late now, wiping it on your bread. I'll start putting everything in one dish and have done with it. What with marmalade in the butter and butter in the raspberry jam?
I bet this is the only house in the street that's got the sinister it with three C's in it.
It was a strong tradition Al Reed came from. Broad northern comedy in broadish dialect, slightly tidied up in Reed's case, and trading heavily on the outspokenness of northern women. Again, Coronation Street would make great play with that, as Norman Evans had done on radio over the garden wall many years before.
Come here, will you? There, young gallant. Now, listen, never mind that. Now, this ball has been over here three times and it's got to stop. I can't... Come here, and I'm talking! If it comes here again, I'm telling you for the last time. Never mind that. If I come down there, I'll separate you from your best. Come here, I'm talking. Yeah, well, you tell your mother this, because Good morning, Mrs. Butterworth. it's been bad. Yes, well, I haven't. I haven't been out. No, well, I mean, you can't. No. Mm. Well, we're not bothering going away till November. We might get a bit of spring then. I don't know whether it... No, I thought of going out today. It was a bit nice, you know. I thought, well, who have you? Oh, dear. Always something happens, isn't it, this time? Yes. Well, I haven't been well myself, you know. I can't... Have you? Oh, well, it'll make you feel a bit worried, won't it, really? I wouldn't bother if I were you. Oh, no!
The great northern woman, as interpreted, of course, by a great northern male comic, Norman Evans, in austerity days. The sound of female solo comedians had not been commonly heard over the years, give or take the odd impressionist like Beryl Ord or Florence Desmond, and radio's long line of Cockney Charlady characters. When Jan the Catalyst did Mrs. Feather, that was a character creation too. A comedian with a real regional accent speaking in something like her own character, as near as stand-up artists ever get, was a considerable rarity. So no wonder I remember Gladys Morgan so vividly.
It's very nice to be here anyway. It's very cold, isn't it? Yes, it's cold and up in here, isn't it? Yes. Yes. Well, I'm glad you like my little blazer. You like it? Yes, I bought this to go to Blackpool this summer. Yes, you know, on my holiday. And then you go to Port Cole, but I thought I'd have a change this time, you know. Yes. We have some lovely apartments in Blackpool. Oh, I shall never forget them. Leaving it on the sea if you had a flying saucer. Yeah. Oh, dear, there was a cluster up there. There were 28 of us round the dining table. Yeah, but it's too many, you know. Well, it is, you know. It was my turn to sit down the Saturday we came away. We had a lovely little landlady there, mine. Oh, she was a nice little woman, see? She came from Manchester. Yeah, she couldn't help it. Yeah. Nice little woman, she liked me. Oh, she took to me like me. Well, you know, I was the only bit of glamour about the place like me. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, she was very nice. She said, now I want you all to enjoy yourselves while you're staying with me. Get out as much as you can. It's up to me, though. Oh, yes, fair dues. Yes. She said, you sit down, love, and have your breakfast when it's warm. I said to her, I don't like to be rude, love, I said, but there's a clock in my place, isn't there? No, indeed, she said, that's a beaten.
A veteran Welsh stand-up woman. Several underprivileged minorities represented there, all at once by Gladys Morgan. On the regional home services, whole comic traditions could develop more or less in private as far as the national audience was concerned, completely in private in the case of, say, Welsh language comedy, which understandably didn't make it to the national network at all. The Scottish tradition we can drop in on for itself and because its stars became well known to us all later on.
This is the Scottish Home Service, and for the 100th time, it's all yours.
The 100th edition of a show starring Jimmy Logan and Stanley Baxter, and this was 1952. The sit tune was a slice of pure Americana with Scottish words.
Here you are, it's all yours.
So relaxed as a smile from
the sheep who sail our near and far. It's all yours, and the steady the hands of our place. Reap the fiery cross along through the island. Like that beacon with a star, and shall be joined. Time to hear me longing for the two rendezvous. Leaving restaurant cheer and invite you to hear. The show
is setting the heather ablaze, indeed. Both stars had interests and connections in American showbiz, so even the honored traditions of Bunsnicht were at risk.
So you're not having a nicht with us? No, actually, we're having an evening with T.S. Eliot. Look, it's Bum's Night. T.S. Eliot is an American who lives in Britain.
Oh, is that a fact? Oh, no wonder Bunty Spandler suggested it. She's always celebrating with Americans who live in Britain.
And how will you honor T.S. Eliot?
Oh, we'll just have a cocktail party, I think. Bunty's made loads of her wee special savouries. And after we've eaten them all, we have the big ceremony.
The big ceremony?
Yes. Somebody will punch in the bicarbonate of soda.
Jimmy Logan and Stanley Baxter. That was from a follow-up series called Just As You Please. Just occasionally in a nationally aired comedy, you've got a mixture of accents, as indeed you get in real life. And from that, you'll guess I'm talking about a northern series. If it happens in real life, the northerners will do it. Jimmy Clitheroe was the star, a man-child of piercingly assertive vocal tone and, if you saw him live, sinister elderly knees. In my memory, all his utterances began with, "Grandad!" And the interesting thing is that Grandad was a Scot. The whole setup, with a naughty schoolboy in the lead, reminded me strongly of the D.C. Thompson comics like Beano and Dandy, which, being produced in Dundee, often did have a Caledonian flavour that we young readers tended to miss. You couldn't miss Jimmy Clitheroe.
Glenda, didn't you say I had to clean my bike?
I certainly did, and it's a perfect disgrace.
Well, you tell Aunt Susan, because she won't let me.
Why won't she?
Just because she's tidied the living room.
Jimmy, don't be ridiculous. You can't clean your bike in the house.
All right. But it's cold outside, and I didn't want you to catch a chill.
I'm not cleaning your bike. It's Friday night, my dad's night.
But, Grandad, me mum's away. You're not going to leave me on my own, are you?
Susan will be in. She'll take care of you.
Oh, bossy Anna. If she starts on me...
Now, look here, Jimmy. I don't want any arguments while I'm out having a wee drink.
Well, if an argument starts, go to another pub.
Comedy with flying ducks on the wall, you might call that. And it wasn't enough for some of the younger northern comics, who wanted to incorporate into their routines some of the wild fantasies made available by the goon generation. In fact, zany Ken Dodd, in his early days, was thought of as a sort of goon show in himself.
In this show, we're going to do all sorts of experiments. I'm always experimenting. I once put sunglasses on a hen. It was 3 weeks trying to hatch out a black pudding. We want to bring you the theatre atmosphere. All the people listening at home. Pretend you're at the music hall. Chuck orange peel at one another. All you children, pretend you're in the balcony. Climb on the top of the sideboard and drop nuts on your granddad's head. That's it. I tell you what, let's have some community singing. We'll sing the songs we all like singing in the bath. Come on, everybody take your clothes off and we get cracking. This will be a radio show to end all radio shows.
Ken Dodd in 1960. So the northern tradition was quite healthy enough to look after itself, and still is today. But going right against all that, as the 50s moved into the 60s, was the new strain of university humour. Undergraduate humour, its detractors called it, although that was usually misleading, especially in the case of the show that started it all off. In fact, it would take a whole programme to dismantle the misunderstandings that have grown up around Beyond the Fringe. Its four participants were not students, but graduates, for example. They'd left their universities and were either professionals or about to be. The show was not an Edinburgh Fringe show, as its title should have indicated, but an official production of the festival proper, and so on. What hasn't been misunderstood about the show is the influence it had on comedy styles, including those on the radio, because although Beyond the Fringe was a theatrical event that never took root in radio, you heard recordings of it so often you could almost become convinced you'd seen it live.
Now, take a situation in which, what for purposes of argument, we'll call an unnamed power, should take a nuclear missile and drop it on the United Kingdom. That's the only thing. We, in the United Kingdom, would then take another nuclear missile and drop it on Russia, on the This, you see, would deter them from being... rather, it would effectually discourage them. Well, it would go over and have them run. I've got an apology to make you tonight, actually, because I was going to bring along a hydrogen bomb to show you. We do have one or two, you know, that we send round to Women's Institute. Unfortunately, the one I had my eye on was being used.
Alan Bennett, who did, of course, have a northern accent as broad as most of the red-nosed comics, but whose satirical roles inclined him to the mock genteel. Although there were no women in the cast, that had been the rule in University Review for many years, it was an extremely well-balanced show in terms of the distribution of talents, and even of educational origins. Peter Cook and Jonathan Miller coming from Cambridge, and Dudley Moore and Alan Bennett from Oxford. Miller was much the most experienced. He'd never actually been a member of the Cambridge Footlights Club, that's another misapprehension, but he performed with them, and was attracting attention from national critics as early as 1954. Even before that, in 53, he'd got onto radio in a show called Under 20 Parade, doing a version of this material, which he revamped 6 years later.
The correct announcing of the news involves very subtle skills. Witness the rapid modulation from trivial to gloomy news contained in this recording.
And on finding himself unable to withdraw his finger from the tin of treacle, he kept his family cheerful during 6 hours, which it took for the fire brigades of three counties to release him, by a spirited rendering of Abide With Me.
The death was announced in London last night of Sir George Thrust husband, who was for many years. In the latter part of the war, Sir George was largely responsible for many of his own actions. He was 99.
The Jonathan Miller of 1959. That was standard radio about radio. But Beyond the Fringe, when it came along, tackled a whole range of public targets. The church, the military, royalty and parliament, the universities, naturally, the theatrical world, and an assortment of literary and philosophical topics. It wasn't only talent and education that enabled them to do it, I think, but the fact that they were old enough to remember the war, and perhaps felt that they knew the world in a way succeeding generations of university comics didn't. Once the National Service had been abolished, these later youngsters were expected to amuse an adult world almost straight out of school. So the next wave of college clowns had to settle for something slightly less than satire. It tended to be called irreverence.
Good night, sir. Tonight, I suppose I've been dormant at this theatre for 50 years now. I've seen all the stars of the old-time music hall, have you? You want to know about them, you just come to me. I'll tell you about them. Because I've seen them. Dickie King, George Rovey, Murray Lloyd, Harry Lauder, they were rotten.
Bill Oddy as the doorman in Cambridge Circus, a footlight show that went to Broadway and came back to radio, about the best a university show could do. The one area that Beyond the Fringe had left relatively free for exploration was sex. And they had a full-time woman on Cambridge Circus to help with this.
Oh, John, why don't you admit it? You don't love me anymore.
All right, I admit it.
John, once we had something that was pure and wonderful and good, what's happened to it?
You spent it all.
That's all that matters to you, isn't it? Money. I despise you. Do you hear me? I hate you. I don't know how I've been able to stand it. I suppose it's because I love you. I don't know. I do love you, John. I love you more than I can say. I need you, John. Please, John, don't look at photographs of nude women while I'm talking to you.
Joe Kendall and John Cleese in I'm Sorry I'll Read That Again, the program mold into which Cambridge Circus was poured. Radio comedy had been edging round to sex for some years, but always with one foot on the floor, and sometimes two.
Take Zoe, for instance.
Zoe?
Well, let's face it, I've known her for quite a time now.
So?
Well, I'm familiar with her.
Well, I doubt she's knowing you.
Doubt what?
If you're familiar.
Well, that doesn't make sense, surely.
Why?
But how do you possibly know someone for a long time without getting familiar?
I don't know, but you've managed it for years.
Well, I haven't known her that long.
Look, David, old boy, when you talk about being... Oh, never mind, I know what you meant. And I know what you were going to say.
What?
That you enjoyed going out with each other before, but now you have the added pleasure of feeling, well, at home together.
Oh, I couldn't have put it better myself.
That goes without saying.
George Cole and Colin Gordon in A Life of Bliss, one of those very gentle 50s comedies that benefited by the increasing freneticism of everything else. The breakthrough into wholehearted vulgarity was not really made by I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again, but that show clearly did foresee such a development.
Radio Croon is free radio without inhibitions or censorship, dedicating itself to promotion of radicalism, liberalism, anti-racialism, and dirty jokes. We will be dedicating many broadcasts to the right to free speech, bringing together famous politicians, moralists, and clergymen to discuss controversial issues and tell dirty jokes.
Not until Channel 4 came along was this manifesto put into practice.
But from now on, every program will be full frontal. We believe that the full beauty of the human body is something everyone should be able to listen to whenever they wish. With this in mind, amongst our forthcoming presentations will be in the morning, 8 o'clock nudes, and then nude bulletins every half hour. This will be followed by Lift Up Your Skirts and Drop Gear with John Peel. Naturally, all these programs will be totally uncensored.
And the last voice there was that of David Hatch, now managing director of BBC Radio. Need one say more? Nobody was actually dealing in depravity yet. But of course, the nearer you could get to seeming to do so, the more audiences shrieked. Radio was lucky that the contemporary masters of this tightrope walk over the chasm of taste were also very funny.
I've got it! He's got it, Mr. Hall! It's coming out in a wave! Yes! We're going to do Samson and Delilah.
Go on, Jewel, that's it.
I see Samson all huge and all bush.
Bush, yeah, yeah.
He puts great bulging shoes and...
Oh, yeah.
And whopping great nose.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The film opens with him lying there, half out on his palliasse.
Oh.
And suddenly there's a movement behind the arras.
Yes.
And who comes falling in?
Oh, shut up.
No, yes.
Falling in?
Falling me thought.
No, no.
Who comes falling in but this forlorn Delilah?
Yes.
She fathers this sleeping eek. And she pulls out this pair of scissors and locks off his right.
Yes, I see that. Yes, a great close-up of his head, Nancy Ryan. Yes, that is your cinema verite.
Yes.
That is your cinema verite.
True. But then suddenly,
yes,
he comes round.
Yeah. Mm. Go on.
found.
What happened? What happened?
What?
Where did he come from?
I'll tell you what.
Yes?
It's all ebbing away, he screams. It's all ebbing away.
Ebbing away, lovely dialogue, yes.
Come on. Then the Philistines come and they mock him, Mr. Orr.
Oh, they mock him. What a figure of tragedy he represents.
Then they drag him up the king's lattice.
Oh.
And chain him.
Oh.
Chain him by his lallies to the pillar.
Oh.
Then he gets his wild up.
Gets his wild up.
Yes.
Yes.
And then with one mighty heave, oh. He brings the whole lattice tumbling about their heads.
Oh.
Here's the film. Bravo, Jules. Bravo, it's an Oscar winner. I shall go again and again. What about you, Mr. Orr?
Well, yes, it makes me want to go.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Beautiful.
And who do you see playing the role of Samson?
Why, this is description. Very big, butch, muscular, blonde, if anyone but it can be.
Who's that?
Jules himself. It's you, Jules.
Me?
Yes.
Oh, pity.
Why? I saw Miss Dolphins tonight.
Kenneth Horne, Kenneth Williams, and Hugh Paddock in the successor to Beyond Our Ken, Round the Horn, with scripts by Barry Took and Marty Feldman. The world of the consenting adults was still a new idea to most people, and that mixture of backslang and circus and travelling parlance, plus a few inventions of the scriptwriter's own, seemed excitingly naughty, as well as hilarious. It's long been a function of comedy in Britain to register our national embarrassment in the face of real emotions. And Round the Horn was especially expert at this. If it could be combined with a send-up of theatrical dialogue conventions, so much the better.
Oh, Charles, you startled me creeping up on me like this.
Did I, Fiona?
Yes, you gave me a turn.
Did I? It must be my turn, miss. It's just taking a little stroke. Terribly romantic, isn't it? Moonlight glinting on the water. Look, Fiona. Up there. Vast. Almost frighteningly vast. And dark. I wonder if there's intelligent life up there.
Up there, Charles?
Not up my nose. Fiona, the sky. All those stars, they're shining just for us. Even reflected in the water. There, the flower. There, Orion's belt. And just below it, Orion's trousers. There, what seems to be the bear. And there, what looks like a dead Margie.
There it is, Tom.
Love is so many things, Fiona. Wanting and needing and feeling and searching and losing and finding, hoping and dreading and wanting to need and needing to want. And...
Don't speak, Charles. Not for a moment.
Why not?
I want to get a word in. I love you, Charles. Breathlessly, hopelessly, tenderly, despairingly, longingly, meltingly. It's a wordless love, Charles.
We are both lost, Fiona. Lost in each other's arms, fumbling in the dark. Fumbling for the right words. Oh, Fiona, kiss me.
Not here, Charles. People will see.
I don't care about people.
All right, come in, number 13. Your time's up.
I hear what you say. We're coming in directly. Next time, we'll look at how much swinging was done out of vision as the 60s advanced. Till then, I hand you back to Jonathan Miller at Broadcasting House.
An announcer who behaves himself can get nice, juicy foreign assignments and send in reports, or say, from Washington. However, these boys have to be first-class indicators, and they have also to provide their own atmospherics.
Washington. Radio Fonds is written and presented by Russell Davis and produced by Neil Cargill. Tomorrow night at 6:30, Radio 4 gives way to Radio Prune, which you can hear. I'm sorry, I'll read that again.